They sighed and waved us through. With no plausible reason to define an oxbow lake, the last week had been spent in desultory, dispiriting classes about something called adult life, which would, it seemed, consist largely of filling in forms and compiling a CV, hobbies and interests, socialising, watching TV. Today we learnt how to balance a chequebook. We stared out of the window at the lovely day and thought, not long now. 4, 3, 2. Back in our form room at break, we began to graffiti our white school shirts with felt tips and magic markers, kids hunched over each other's backs like tattooists in a Russian jail, marking all available space with sentimental abuse. "Take care of yourself, you dick," wrote Paul Fox. "This shirt stinks," wrote Chris Lloyd. In lyrical mood, my best friend, Martin Harper, wrote, "Mates forever," beneath a finely detailed cock and balls. Harper and Fox and Lloyd. These were my best friends at the time. Not just boys, but the boys. And while some girls circled, Debbie Warwick and Becky Boyne and Sharon Findlay, the group was self-sufficient and impenetrable. Though none of us played an instrument, we'd imagined ourselves as a band. Harper, we all knew, was lead guitar and vocals. Fox was bass, a low and basic thump, thump, thump. Lloyd, because he proclaimed himself mad, was the drummer, which left me as maracas, Lloyd had said, and we'd laughed, and maracas was added to the long list of nicknames. Fox drew them on my school shirt now, maracas crossed beneath a skull like military insignia. Debbie Warwick, whose mum was an air hostess, had smuggled in a carrier bag full of miniatures in the chocolate box flavours that we favoured, coffee and cream, mint and orange, and we wrapped them in our fists and swigged and winced and spluttered as Mr. Ambrose, feet up on the desk, kept his eyes fixed on the video of Free Willy 2 that played in the background. A special treat ignored by everyone. The miniatures served as an aperitif to our very last school dinner. Memories still remained of the legendary food fight of 94. The ketchup sachets exploded underfoot, breaded fish sent skimming through the air like ninja stars, jacket spuds lobbed like grenades. "Go on, I dare you," said Harper to Fox as he weighed a leathery sausage experimentally by its tip. But the teachers patrolled the aisles like prison guards, and with the promise of brown sponge and brown custard to come, the dangerous moment passed. In the Leavers' Assembly, Mr. Pascoe made the speech that we'd all expected, encouraging us to look to the future but remember the past, to aim high but weather the lows, to believe in ourselves but think of others. The important thing was not only what we'd learnt, and he hoped we'd learnt a great deal, but also the kind of young adults we'd become. And we listened, young adults stuck between cynicism and sentimentality, boisterous on the surface, but secretly daunted and sad. We sneered and rolled our eyes, but elsewhere in the hall hands gripped other hands, and snuffles were heard as we were urged to cherish the friendships we'd made, the friendships that would last a lifetime.
"A lifetime? Christ, I hope not," said Fox, locking my head beneath his arm, fondly rubbing his knuckles there.
It was prize-giving time, and we sank low in our chairs. Prizes were awarded to the kids who always got the prizes, applause fading long before they'd left the stage to stand in front of the photographer from the local press, book tokens held beneath the chin as if in an ID parade. Next, led by Mr. Solomon, music, the Merton Grange School Swing Band clattered out to satisfy our craving for the American big band sound with a cacophonous, lolloping rendition of Glenn Miller's In the Mood.
"Why? Just why?" said Lloyd.
"To put us in the mood," said Fox.
"What mood?" I said.
"In a shitty mood," said Lloyd.
"Fucked off by Glenn Miller and his orchestra," said Fox.
"No wonder he crashed the plane," said Harper.
And when the barrage came to an end, Fox and Lloyd and Harper leapt to their feet and cheered.